Jake's Christmas, a sequel to Tommy and the Guttersnipe. "You can't give him that," Jake said. "Why not?" Tommy asked, looking through the darkened store window at the box of crisp white writing paper and envelopes. "When he goes back west, he'll be able to write to us." "He did write to you," the younger boy reminded him. "It's not his fault somebody stole the letters." The two boys walked down the empty sidewalk. Whatever Tommy found for his father's Christmas present, he'd have to come back to buy it during the day when the stores were open. They had just left the Clarion, the newspaper, where they worked as copy boys in the evening. Now it was time to get back to the apartment and get some sleep before school. Jake was right. Tommy's dad had written letters while he was working in the lumber camp. But the man who took the mail into town had been tearing open the letters to steal the money the men were sending home to their families. He couldn't understand why Tommy was still angry at his father for being gone so long. To Jake, a father who came home at all was a good father. Jake's father had left him alone in the streets of New York City to fend for himself when he was only 3 or 4 years old. And he had survived among the other homeless children until that past summer, when he came to live with Tommy, his mother, and his baby sister. In 2 weeks, it would be 1897, and 2 weeks after that, Tommy would turn 13. Jake didn't know how old he was, but Mrs. McMahon, Tommy's mother, said he should tell people he was 8 and that he could celebrate his birthday on July 25th, the feast of St. James, because James and Jacob were the same name. When Jake first came to live with them, they lived in a dark little tenement apartment on Hester Street. But after he and Tommy began to work at the Clarion, and Mrs. McMahon found a new job sewing shirts, the family was able to move to a nicer place with 2 bedrooms and several windows. Tommy said it wasn't as nice as the little house they'd had in Brooklyn, but it was the best place Jake had ever lived. Now, Mr. McMahon had come home for a few weeks to celebrate Christmas with the family before he left again to go west, where he could find better work than in the dirty, dangerous factories of the city. When Jake and Tommy woke up in the morning, the baby, Bridie, was playing on the floor while Mrs. McMahon made breakfast and Mr. McMahon read the newspaper. "I see your friend Mr. Roosevelt is still fighting with the saloon keepers," he remarked as the boys came into the room. "Did you read the editorial?" Tommy asked. "It says that Teddy's right. There are too many bars in the slums." "Well, just so long as you keep to the schools and out of the bars yourself," Mr. McMahon said. "It's good you boys are working and not getting into trouble." "No need to preach to this pair," Mrs. McMahon said, as she set plates of bacon, eggs, and bread on the table in front of them. "They've seen enough of the streets for a lifetime," she looked at Jake again, "maybe 3 or 4 lifetimes. "Oh, sure, you're good lads," Tommy's father agreed. "Now eat up, and then one more day of school, and you can take a day off for Christmas." "From school," Jake reminded him, "we still have to work at the paper." "Well, you'll have the day at home anyway," Mr. McMahon said, "and you'll be glad to be at the paper Christmas Eve. If you were here, I'd set you to the whitewashing." As the boys walked home that night, they saw from the street a candle burning in the window. Tommy explained to Jake that the candle was put there by Mrs. McMahon to guide Joseph and Mary and make them welcome, as the innkeepers of Bethlehem never did. Once inside the quiet apartment, they could see by the light of the candle that Mr. McMahon had painted the walls of the darkened apartment a fresh, bright white, another Irish tradition, as were the sprigs of holly over the fireplace and doorways, and the fresh-baked caraway seed cakes in the pantry. Father Christmas had not been there yet. The stockings hung limp at the fireplace. But there were 3 large packages wrapped in brown paper, and a smaller package that looked much the same. The boys had a quick snack of bread and milk Mrs. McMahon always left for them at night, and then went to bed. In the morning, they hurried to dress in their best. The rest of the family was ready for church, and Jake and Tommy barely had time to glance at the stockings at the fireplace, now fat and full, before they all went out to church. When they came back home again, Mrs. McMahon hurried to check on the turkey in the oven, and the boys went to their room to get the presents they'd bought after school the day before and wrapped in newsprint at the paper that night. "Here's my gift," Tommy said, handing over a slim rectangular package. Mr. McMahon opened the paper wrapping to find a small book. "It's Thomas Moore. I know you like him, and it's small enough to carry with you." "It is that," his father agreed. "And you're right. A bit of Thomas Moore in the evening is a pleasure." "Now I suppose you should open something," he said to Tommy, and nodded at the three big packages. "Pick any one of them. They're all the same." Tommy went to one of the packages, which nearly reached his waist. He tore the paper and stripped it away, revealing a brown leather travel bag. "Now then, family," Mr. McMahon announced, "here's your Christmas surprise. I won't risk losing my family again. I'm taking you to Denver. I can find work there, or at least close enough to be home now and again, not just once a year." He put the small package in front of the baby. "Here, Bridie, you can unwrap your own little carpet bag," he added. But Jake looked at the two unwrapped packages, a travel bag for Tommy, and one for each of his parents. His eyes welled up with tears as he realized that's who they really were, Tommy's parents, never his. He got up and ran out of the room, trying to get down the stairs and out of the building before anyone saw him cry. Jake hadn't cried in years and years, but he was crying now. He was out the door and nearly to the sidewalk when a strong hand clapped him on the shoulder and spun him around to face Tommy's father. "Ah, you wee fool," Tommy's father began to say, then quickly grabbed Jake's wrist as Jake struggled to hit him. "Stop and listen, boy." He held on tightly until Jake looked at him. "I've lived out of a trunk for the last dozen years," Mr. McMahon said. "What would I need a travel bag for?" Jake stopped struggling and, as he felt his wrists free, rubbed the tears from his eyes. Mr. McMahon took the kerchief from his pocket and wiped Jake's face. "The third bag is for you, you silly thing. I'd no more leave you behind than I would Bridie or Tom." He stood up and took Jake's hand. "And you know, Jake, the West is for fresh starts. Now I don't know if you were born Irish or German or Swedish or Dutch or when it happened, and neither do you. But when our train crosses the Mississippi next week, you'll be my son, James McMahon, born July 25th, 1888, and no man will dare say otherwise to me. Now let's get back upstairs before your brother Thomas has all the turkey eaten." This story was written by Mike Peterson and read by Mary Miller. This story was made possible by a grant of the New York State Reading Association. And this production is made possible by the New York News Publishers Association Newspapers and Education Program, by a grant from the New York Newspapers Foundation and the New York State United Teachers, 2009.